Hi, everybody. Welcome to Two Off the First for October the 11th, 2022. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Good to have you here with us, whether you're listening on a podcast service or you're watching us on golfnewsnet.com or YouTube. We are grateful for your time today. We are presented by our friends at French Lick Resort. We have two stories for you. Sorry for yesterday's show not coming up. Yesterday was a holiday. I went up playing nine holes with my wife, so didn't wind up recording the podcast. Apologies for that. But we still have basically the same two topics to talk about. One is LIV-related, and it has been kind of expanded upon a little bit, actually, since Monday, so it's probably a good thing we didn't talk about on Monday. And then we have kind of Tom Kim and John Rahm to talk about, the big winners, along with Jody Ewart-Shadoff of the weekend in professional golf. So let's start with LIV, and then we'll get to the winners of the weekend on the back half of things. So LIV, obviously, we've caught you up on everything related to their relationship with the MENA Tour, the Middle East North Africa Tour, with their submission to the official World Golf Ranking that they now have a strategic alliance, and therefore they should be getting world ranking points immediately. The world ranking body responding and saying, whoa, we need to review what you have sent us, and it's going to take us at least 2 weeks, which just so happens to coincide with the time frame that you need these points, so you're not getting any points this year. And now we have come through the Bangkok, Thailand event, where Eugenio Chikara won, which was great for him, young kid, decided to eschew playing on the PGA Tour, even trying to get to the PGA Tour, signing with LIV, and winds up winning this tournament in Thailand, which had probably the most bizarre leaderboard of any LIV event if you have paid attention to any of the six that they have played so far. The others all kind of seemed to fit into a very narrow band of the players who played well. This time it was quite different, and a lot of the players who hadn't performed particularly well so far performed well this time. So you had Chikara, who's really getting used to being a professional golfer, and probably the lack of a schedule, the lack of starts in tournaments to kind of get reps as a professional. You've got Richard Bland, who was a part of it. You've got Harold Varner III, who moved over from the PGA Tour, probably one of the more disappointing signings in terms of kind of public thought, public reaction to it. But nevertheless, you had an interesting kind of tournament that was a little bit different than anything related to LIV previously. And in the midst of all of this, you've got these players who are upset that the official World Golf Ranking told them they can't have points this week. And Bryson DeChambeau went on the offensive, as did Greg Norman after the event. Now, Greg Norman after the event said that the official World Golf Ranking governing board should, quote, grow up and give them points, even though LIV basically satisfies none of the requirements to earn official World Golf Ranking points, even with their strategic alliance with the MENA Tour. That's one tack. Then you've got Bryson DeChambeau and actually Brooks Koepka, who I thought were enemies. Apparently they're not, or at least they're enough to stand together in a news conference at the LIV events where they make everybody seem like they're all buddies, even though they're probably not. And both guys were asked about the official World Golf Ranking points. Brooks isn't really cerebral about it, and I don't think he really all that much cares because he's won four majors. He's pretty much good to go for the rest of his viable career in the major championships. But if you look at what Bryson said, and I'll read the quote directly to you because I don't want to mangle his words. I want to give you exactly what he said when he was asked about this. And he said, quote, they're delaying the inevitable, the official World Golf Ranking. We've hit every mark in their criteria. So for us not to get points is kind of crazy with having, at least I believe, we have the top players in the world. Not all of them, but we certainly believe that there's enough that are in the top 50 and we deserve to be getting world ranking points. When they keep holding it back, they're going to just keep playing a waiting game where we're going to keep dropping down in the rankings to where our points won't even matter. That's what they're trying to accomplish. And I hope that people can see right through that rather than believe the lies that they've been told. From my perspective, I think we deserve points, end quote. Now, the interesting thing is DeChambeau talks about lying and then lies, straight away lies. He lies up top. He says, we've hit every mark in their criteria. We've been over this over and over again. Don't need to rehash it. They haven't hit basically any of them. But what's interesting is that maybe just retelling this lie hasn't worked, so maybe they're going to do something about it. Eugenio Chikara, after he won, spoke with, and I forget the journalist's name, so I apologize to the gentleman, but with Golf Channel Latino America for a podcast, and he said that the players have been talking about having a cut for LIV golf events, going back to the event at Trump's Place at Bedminster, which was a real S show back in the summertime. And they believe that they can institute a cut, however minor that is, and satisfy one of the World Golf Ranking requirements, and that they should get points for the Jeddah event this week, which is Saudi Arabia, by the way. because they will have satisfied that specific requirement. So the rumor is, and none of this has been confirmed by Liv, by the way, that you'd think they would tell you this stuff right away, like they do everything else. But the rumor, and these come from Chikara, but also all of the kind of Liv bot accounts of people who you'd never heard of 7 months ago, but all of a sudden have all kinds of inside sources about Liv and tens of thousands of bot followers. But what the narrative is from Liv-backed folks and Liv participants is that they're going to institute a cut for this week's final individual event, and that cut will be three players. That they will have a cut after 36 holes from 48 to 45, and that's going to supposedly do it, which, again, this is another kind of idea in Liv's half-assed idea category, which they are full of. They have all kinds of ideas that are half-assed to try to satisfy broadcasters, or to try to get people interested in the product, or to try to satisfy the official World Golf ranking. And they thought the MENA Tour idea, because they play 54-hole events and are certified to give points as such, would be an instant loophole, and they would be absolutely nailing it. And that obviously wasn't true. And then they've come up with this idea. Well, you say we need a cut. Well, we'll cut some people. We'll cut three people. And good luck to those three, but we'll have a cut and you'll have to give us points. Even though, once again, first of all, that would not satisfy the spirit of the rule of having a cut. Second of all, there's still a whole ton of other criteria that they don't meet. And so they're trying to check boxes with loopholes or with disingenuous answers to some of the World Golf ranking criteria, instead of just saying, look, we have to make a choice. And this is, again, genuine advice. You have to make a choice if you are Liv. Do you want to play the game or do you not? Because you have built yourself as this rebel tour that's revolutionary and different, thinking about a different way of golf. And if that's the way you want to be perceived, what the hell are you doing trying to put together something that fits really neatly into the golf ecosystem, or trying to find loopholes to fit into it? If you want to be different than professional golf as it is, and you want to be revolutionary, the last thing you want is to be associated with the World Golf Ranking, which stands for everything that is professional golf today. Exactly codified. We want 72 holes. We want at least 75 players. We want to have different rankings for different tours. We want to have strokes gained. All of this stuff that has kind of become codified in professional golf in the modern era. That's what the world ranking represents. So if you want a tour, if you want an organization that's perceived as genuinely different and not just some whiny baby that feels like they deserve points and they don't have to do anything different, or they can be different, they can be snowflakes, then you kind of have to just go on your own and say, look, we're going to earn this ourselves. We are going to attract enough top players that you are going to be forced to recognize us in some fashion. Not necessarily the world ranking, but you're going to have to let some of our guys in the majors based on their performances, because we have that many top players. And you may not like our format, but this is what it is. We're the best. And if you're leaving us out, then you are really hurting your own brand in the end. That's the way they should play it. The way they are playing it is ultimately they're going to have to change everything. And it's going to look a lot like what pro golf looks like on the PGA Tour, DP World Tour, LPGA Tour, name your tour. It's going to be 72 holes. It's going to be more than 48 players, probably 72 players. You're probably going to have two shotgun starts a day. You're just going to look like standard issue professional golf, even if you kept the shotgun start component of it, even if you keep the team component of it. And at the end of the day, that's just going to cost the Saudis more money, because you're going to have to buy more players, or you're going to have to water down your fields with qualifiers. And you're going to have to do so many different things to satisfy the World Golf Ranking that you're going to take your product, what you thought was really special, and make it look like a shadow of what it was. You have to make the choice at this point if you are Liv. You decide your fate. You decide what you want to do. But this middle ground stuff of trying to be revolutionary on one end and completely in line, even if with asterisks, around the official World Golf Ranking criteria, those don't work. You can't be both. It doesn't work that way. And I don't think from a perception standpoint it's going to work that way. And yes, you may have all of these kind of influencer accounts that are paid off to love Liv Golf, and you've got these random accounts that love Liv Golf and have never been around until April. But if you look at the reaction to everything that's being said by the players, from Bryson to Brooks to Jason Kokrak to Phil Mickelson, and I don't look at everything, right? I mean, I do have stuff to do with my day. But every once in a while, I'll look at one of those players' messages or what's being said about Liv from them. And the responses are overwhelmingly negative. Like, go away. We don't care. It doesn't matter. You're playing exhibition golf. Good luck. See ya. I'm blocking you. I'm unfollowing you. I'm muting you. Whatever it is. So generally, the reaction is not good. And I think that's reflected in what you're seeing and the public reaction to everything. So I don't think that you can win unless you have to be truly different and revolutionary. Not, we just want the money. Make it truly different and maybe you have a chance. Otherwise, this thing's going away in 3 years. It's going to be a total waste of billions of dollars for the Saudis. And Greg Norman's going to look like an absolute failure. Meanwhile, all the players that got paid, they're going to be ultra wealthy. And they may not even have a ticket back to the PGA Tour, but they're going to make out monetary in monetary fashion. So they've already won, really, if they think about it in terms of money. Maybe not in terms of legacy, but if they think about it just in terms of money, they've won. Greg Norman can still lose a whole hell of a lot. And I think he's kind of in line, too, with the way things are going right now. All right. Let's talk about the golf from the rest of the world for the weekend. And I do want to preface all this by saying, I think that the interest in professional golf, broadly speaking right now, is really low. I mean, it is really low. If you look at the television ratings for the Shriners, for the Sanderson Farms, for the Fortinet, and all the surrounding tournaments that are really kind of feed off of interest on the PGA Tour, particularly in the LPGA DP World Tour, the interest is just not there right now. And I think that's maybe a broader conversation, but I will kind of just say briefly before we get into the actual action, I think there's some golf fatigue out there. I think there's fatigue of not only what's happening with the golf establishment and Liv, I think there's genuine fatigue there, but I think there's also viewer fatigue. I think people poured into golf in the summer of 2020 because it was really the only sport on TV at the time. People got into it. And they watched even throughout last year in the fall in pretty decent numbers because they knew, again, that was a reliable sport they could watch. They weren't have to worry about protocols for sports as much. The things were going to happen. And people were still into it. But this fall, man, it is a drag. And even though the golf has been good and interesting, week to week, I mean, it's been interesting. But it just has not drawn the same number of eyeballs. And I think that maybe we are at the point where making the change that the PGA Tour is making to ending the fall wraparound schedule, we know it, is the right time because people are sick of it. And I think probably also already pronouncing the fall going away is probably turned away some number of hardcore fans who are just like, well, if it doesn't matter, I'm not going to watch right now and we'll see what it looks like next year. But all that to say, there just isn't the same amount of attention on golf right now. And it is pretty fascinating to see that there's been that kind of dropped to pre-pandemic levels of interest in professional golf in the fall. That all said, the Shriners was fascinating. I really enjoyed watching it. You had Patrick Cantlay, who was ahead, who shot 60 in the third round. You're thinking, this guy's going to run away with everything. He made practically everything he looked at. He hit incredible approach shots throughout the entire third round to set up, which looked like was going to be a runaway. But then you had Tom Kim there, and you had Tom Kim sitting there, 20-year-old kid, confident, already won on the PGA Tour, played great in the President's Cup. What was he, 3-4 back? He knew he could do something if he got out to a hot start, and he does that. He gets out to a hot start. He catches Patrick Cantlay on, what, the 7th or 8th hole. All of a sudden, they're tied. They go back and forth throughout the entire day. They get through 17 holes. They're tied. They get to 18, which is a short enough par 4, you know, what, 410 yards. Not a difficult hole. A lot of guys hit fairway wood off the tee, some hit driver, some hit iron. It's a pretty standard issue par. It's not that difficult to make birdie, depending on the pin, and you give yourself a chance to win the tournament. And what does Patrick Cantlay do? Duck hooks one right into some desert bushes, and Tom Kim just thumps one right out there, puts in the fairway, and he goes ahead and hits the green. But before that happens, you have Cantlay who decides to play for the win. And by the way, he should have played for the win. He's won plenty of times in the PGA Tour. He should play for trophies at this point. He's got enough money. He doesn't need to necessarily worry about another few hundred thousand dollars. He can worry about trophies. So his ball winds up in a bush. He decides with his caddy he's going to try to extricate the ball from the bush by hitting it, not taking it unplayable. It doesn't go well. Then he winds up having to hit the ball. He hits the ball into the water hazard, guarding the green. He makes a triple by making a 25-footer on the final hole to wind up tied for second with Matthew Neesmith, who has his best career finish on the PGA Tour, and was part of the action, by the way, throughout the day. Was a good player in the final threesome. And then there's Tom Kim. Lags down to a foot, hits it in. He's a two-time PGA Tour winner. He is the youngest guy this side of Tiger Woods to win twice on the PGA Tour. And only one guy has been a two-time winner on the PGA Tour at a younger age. And that's Ralph Goldahl. And that's, you know, a bazillion years ago, relative speaking fashion. So he's the youngest player in at least modern PGA Tour history. Again, him and Tiger. Tiger won his first event in Vegas to have two wins on the PGA Tour. That's not to say Tiger Woods is Tom Kim and Tom Kim is Tiger Woods. There's so much more to that than those first two wins for those guys. But there is kind of a precedent here that he could be special. He could be unique. And yes, he did two times in four starts, so it could be a heater. And you don't want to get too ahead of yourself thinking Tom Kim is the next coming, or, you know, he's the next guy that's going to be on the Mount Rushmore of male professional golf greats. But he's got that killer instinct. He's got the ability to win. He is kind of slow, which I think some of the greatest players of all time are kind of slow. Tiger used to be kind of really slow, a little bit better now, but pretty slow, very methodical. Jack was slow. Arnie wasn't really slow. Ben Hogan was fairly slow at times. So, I mean, you had guys that were methodical that are among the best players in the world or best players in history. And there he is. There's Tom Kim winning twice. He wins the Wyndham Championship to end the season, or the regular season at least, gets into the playoffs. Now he wins this event. He's 15th in the world ranking. You hadn't heard of him probably. Even if you were a hardcore golf fan, you probably hadn't heard of him until July, the Open. And now he's 15th in the world. And it's pretty amazing what he has done this quickly, especially even in a system where you have depressed ranking points for wins. And he's managed to win twice, earn those depressed ranking points, and still be able to pull himself into the top 15 in the world. He's not going anywhere. Not going anywhere. And I tweeted this before. He is a guy I really like to win the PGA Championship next May at Oak Hill. I mean, it just feels absolutely right that he could do that with the kind of ball striking he has, just his presence. He really understands tournament golf. You get into a mano-a-mano situation, he seems to really thrive in that environment. He said afterwards he is just loving playing on the PGA Tour and that he gets to achieve his dreams and goals, which is really special. I think that's really interesting. And I think it's really easy to forget, especially right now, with how much money there is in professional golf, that young guys can have fun, that this could just be a good time. They could be playing for $10,000 instead of $1.44 million that Tom Kim got for winning and have a great time. And that drives them. They are hungry. They have no life attachments other than maybe to their friends and their parents. And other than that, they don't have any entanglements. They don't have kids to care for. They don't have a potential spouse or partner to worry about. They're just living life and living large. And I think that makes Tom Kim particularly dangerous right now. But really interesting fall golf. Again, third tournament in a row. Had a really interesting finish. You had a playoff in Jackson, Mississippi between Sepp Straka and Mac Hughes. You had that total debacle on the 72nd hole again at the Fortinet to start the season with Danny Willett three putting from, 5 feet, 4 feet, and Max Homa chipping in to win. So the three events have been really interesting. We've got the Zozo Championship this week in Japan. According to Narashino Country Club, which has been host to Tiger Woods winning already, to Hideki Matsuyama winning. The third champion of this event was in Thousand Oaks, California, which is Xander Schauffele, when they had it in the States, when you couldn't travel to Japan. But we've got a really good field this week, pretty interesting. Maybe we'll talk about that tomorrow as well in the show, a little preview of the event. And then quickly, I just wanted to get to Jon Rahm. Jon Rahm won the Spanish Open for the third time in his career already on Sunday, and he did it going away. Shot 62 in the final round, was already well ahead. There was no way he was losing this thing. And the interesting thing I think he said after was, these are kind of the hardest events to win, the ones you're expected to win. He was a plus 225 favorite, 9-4, before this tournament started, which is exceptionally low odds for a professional golf tournament for someone to win. So he was expected to blow this field away, and he did that. I think that's really commendable and remarkable. But what I thought was also particularly interesting was two things. One, that he gave credit to kind of the Spanish golf history behind him. He said it was very humbling, kind of hard to process, that he's now won this event the same number of times as Seve Ballesteros. Both of them won it three times as the most of any player. One of the longest running national championships in golf, goes back into the 20s. It's been around a long time. So for him and Seve to be in the same breath in his home country is a pretty big deal. Obviously, Seve's had a different career major-wise, influence-wise, but Jon Rahm knows where he is in terms of his place in history. And he gave a nice shout out to Sergio Garcia for being an influence on him. But I also thought it was kind of interesting, again, to bring back to the first segment, when he was giving his victory speech at the trophy ceremony with all the crowd around, Rom wanted to congratulate Eugenio Chikara and basically said he, the player, is not the enemy. He's not someone I'm rooting against. I'm rooting for him and want to congratulate him and hope he saw what he had to say. I thought that was really classy. I think Rom is a really great representation of what golf can be. I mean, I know he's got the hothead streak that he gets angry and all that stuff, and people don't like that, and at times that can be unbecoming. But generally speaking, Jon Rahm is a really good guy. I've enjoyed his company a couple different times. He's pretty eloquent. He thinks about what he says. Maybe not always about what he does, but he thinks about what he says. He thinks it's critically important to support the European Tour, the DP World Tour. He talked about that in when the PGA Tour is figuring out its plan for all these elevated events and getting the guys together more often. Thought about all of that and has weighed in on that. And I think that was a good thing for him as well. He's a guy who's quietly leading behind the scenes, I have the feeling. He's going to shape the future of professional golf in some ways maybe we don't know about yet. And I know all the focus is on Rory because he's a public face and he talks about it so often. But and he talks about it with a lot of snide remarks and gusto and emotion and sarcasm, trying to kind of poke the other side. Rom's not that way. He wants it to work out. He wants what's best for a bigger set of people. And not to say that Rory doesn't, but Rom goes about it in a different way. And I think he is quietly shaping the future of professional golf. And someday we'll hear that story, maybe from Rom, maybe from someone else. But I think he's having a big hand to play in all of that. Finally, I want to end the show with the other result of the week. Probably brought the biggest smile to my face, personal stuff aside. Jodi Ewers-Shadoff won her first LPGA Tour event. She won the LPGA MetaHeel Championship at the Sataquoy Club in Somas, California. She had a huge lead going in the final day. I think she was 5 up. She got caught. I think she even lost the lead briefly to Paula Rito, who, interestingly enough, had her first win after nearly 200 LPGA starts this year in Canada. And she wound up getting the job done. Rito dropped a critical shot late. Ewers-Shadoff didn't. She wound up winning. And that was huge for her. Really cool. Adam Shadoff is her husband. He's a broadcaster, sports broadcaster in Orlando. We follow each other on Twitter. We've talked plenty of times about the LPGA, the future of the event. It's really cool. It was cool to see his reaction. You don't get to see that too often. So if you get to follow Adam on Twitter, if you get to see his reaction video, it's absolutely worth it. It's really cool to see the emotion on someone else's face when someone they love accomplished their dreams. I know we focus so much on the person who accomplishes it so often, but that support system, that belief, those years of trying to help people through the dark times and kind of lift them up to where they need to get to go to achieve their dreams. It's really cool to see. And it kind of brought a smile to my face. It got a little dusty in the room just because it's hard to imagine this game beat you down so much at a professional level. It is really, really hard to be successful, extremely hard. And you lose so much more often than you win. You lose 99% of the time, but that 1% that you win for the players that do win it's everything. It really is everything. And to do it for the first time after 10 years out on tour, it's really great. And hopefully it's the first of many more for Jodi Ewers-Shadoff. That's going to do it for us today on the show. Thank you so much for the pleasure of your time listening to us. If you listen to us through a podcast service, give us a 5-star rating and throw a thumbs up if you watch us on YouTube. It'll help us reach more people. We appreciate it. We will be back with the show tomorrow. So we will talk to you then for another edition of Two Off the First.